Walter Maffei that came down today from the Philly area to do a documentary on old Artie Wheeler here, commonly known in Baltimore as the thought criminal. That's right, folks. I think thoughts that good white folks shouldn't be thinking. And that's how I got myself into Dutch with the Baltimore Pigs, commonly known as the Baltimore Police. Yeah, you probably remember me. I guess it's been, July the 1st, 2003, that I went down and got on the bus and went to my job as a tool and die maker out of Owens, Illinois, where I've worked for 12 years. And about an hour later, the Baltimore Pigs, the FBI, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms chopped both doors down on my small row home. They had watched my house for a number of weeks. No one came day or night, as they said on the court papers. They seemed to think there was some kind of illegal activity going on here. I might say that a few months before, I had accused the Bush administration of planning and orchestrating what's commonly referred to as 9-1-1, the terrifying massacre of our people that took place in New York City. Well, that hideously diseased up AIDS-infected faggot, Michael Chertoff, who was the station chief of the Mossad, that's the Israeli terrorist organization that operates freely throughout North America and Central America, he sicked the federal and city pigs on the Wheelers here. Yes, folks, we never committed a crime in our life. I had a few old bolt-action military rifles in my house here that I reloaded for and occasionally shot at the shooting range when I could get a ride up there. Anyway, the Baltimore Pigs stole my gun collection. They stole my powder, my reloading equipment. And when the charges wouldn't wash, we never saw the search warrant. Haven't seen it to this day, which these scumbag police used illegally against our home. It was made on the perjured testimony of a filthy detective named Sir John Ciracchi. I call him Sir John Ciracchi. He perjured himself, and so did Sergeant Leo Furman on the warrant. I might add that the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, that stinking Zionist organization in New York, which is run by a fat tub of hog guts named Abe Foxman, who incidentally, folks, is a stinking Zionist. He is not a Jew. And, you know, patriotic Jews give money to that organization. His name was all over my court papers. I even have a copy, which my wife Libby will bring here in just a moment, of an, shall we say, memento made by Officer Stephanie the Pig Lancey. She is Elizabeth. Is going to hand me a copy of our new book, which is called Bush Treason Against America, the 9-1-1 Massacre as Seen Through the Eyes of a Tool and Die Maker. This is the big, wonderful book, folks. Take a look at it here. I want to show you. We have on the second page the urban militiaman. As you can see, he has his bandana on, and he is coming soon to a town near you. He is going to, with his AIM-16, clean out this country from one end to another. Yes, take a look at those red eyes. Take a look at that bandana. Take a look at that M-16 coming soon to a town near you. Anyway, come over here, Elizabeth. We need to talk about you a second. This is my wife, Elizabeth Wheeler. She was tortured for 6.5 hours by the scumbag Baltimore police, wearing ski masks, believe it or not, after they came into the house and chopped down both doors in the process. Now, these scuzzball police knew that I was not home. They saw me go get on the bus. They said on the affidavit that they had watched the house for 2 weeks, and nobody came or went. Yes, the scuzzballs even said that to the court judge, and I say judge with somewhat reservation. Elizabeth, would you like to tell the folks how the Baltimore Pigs tortured you with the plastic handcuffs for 6.5 hours? Yeah, she's going to tell you about the scuzzball Baltimore police, the FBI pigs, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms pigs that came into our house. And they are pigs, ladies and gentlemen. The British were certainly right back in the 1800s when they started calling the police the pigs. Go ahead, doll. Tell them about the pigs torturing you.
They knocked the door down with an axe and said, "We're coming in, we're coming in, police." I rushed to the door and opened the inner door. It was shut and the outer door was locked, and they chopped it down. And I opened the inner door and I said, "What do you think you're doing?" And they grabbed me by my arms and put these plastic restraints on them very tightly. And I was very frightened. I was very nervous. I was very upset. And they pushed me down on Sweetheart's bed over there and said, "Now sit down and shut up."
Now, folks, she's 73 years old. Is that a way for police, pigs, to treat an elderly lady?
I sat there for 6.5 hours with these plastic restraints on my arms, and they were very tight, and they were making my arms swell, and it was very painful. And I told them several times that they were too tight, but they didn't pay any attention to me. And it's difficult for me to recall again what happened because it was so traumatic and so painful. And talking about it upsets me a lot. And I try not to do it very much.
Elizabeth, were they young policemen?
Yes, they were young.
And they had no respect for you whatsoever?
None.
Were they white or black?
They were both.
Okay. Both. Now, they kept you there for how long?
From 2:30 in the after... Well, it was a little after 2, actually. About 10 minutes after 2 until 8 o'clock that night.
They had you in handcuffs.
Yes.
And you could not move from the spot they put you.
No.
I might say at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that when the pigs finally allowed her to use the bathroom, she had to have her hands handcuffed. She wasn't even allowed to wipe herself. What do you think of that?
So you're there, and now you have to go to the bathroom, but you have to wear cuffs.
Yes.
And you told them you had to go to the bathroom.
Yes.
So that's really...
It got to a point where I had to go.
Yeah, sure. It was,
most of the pigs that were in the house were men. There were only 2 women, and they came and went. They didn't stay in the house constantly while they were ransacking the house and taking things out.
But usually I understand that, because I was with Operation Rescue, and when women are detained, they usually have a woman policeman, a woman there, to make sure that everything is right. Okay, so now you're there until, what did you say, 5 hours?
6 hours.
Six hours.
It was over 6 hours. It was about 6.5 hours.
Now, when did they knock at the door?
No.
No, didn't even ask to come in. I mean, they didn't ask permission to come in or anything. They just chopped the door down.
They just chopped the door down and said, "We're coming in, but it's the police. Coming in, coming in."
I might add that they were carrying plastic shields in front of them. They knew they were about to get the scout rifle unlimbered on them.
That's horrible. Were there any police women around to take care of you?
Well, there was one here when I had to go to the bathroom. She went up to the bathroom with me, and I needed some help
in
cleaning myself.
Yeah.
And I asked her if she would help me. She says, "No, I don't do that sort of thing."
How old are you, Elizabeth?
I was 73 at the time.
Have you ever had any trouble with the police or anything? You're just a good housewife.
Try to be.
Yeah. Have you ever seen men like this before treat a woman like that or a lady like that? Would you consider yourself a lady, Elizabeth?
I try to be.
Yeah, I know you do. What kind of men would do that?
Pigs.
I can't comprehend it.
Pigs.
So, Elizabeth, then they finally leave.
Yes.
And they took all your Social Security, took all your cards, everything.
They took books, they took papers.
They stole your money too, didn't they?
They stole almost $7,000 out of the house.
Wait a minute, stop again. Are you saying to me that they took $7,000 of yours?
Yes.
And they never gave it back to you?
Yes, they gave it back finally, but they took it to begin with so that I couldn't hire a lawyer. I didn't have any money to pay any bills with. I didn't have any money to buy any groceries with.
If you were to evaluate your husband, what kind of a man would you say he is?
Fantastic.
Good husband.
Fantastic.
You married a good man.
The very best.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
Artie, I've just sort of thought about what your wife said to me, Elizabeth. I cannot believe that men would treat a lady like that. It's incomprehensible in my mind that they would do it.
Well, you see, you have to understand that we're not dealing with men, Mr. Maffei. We're dealing with Baltimore City pigs, better known as the police. And we're dealing with FBI pigs. And we're dealing with Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms pigs. And we found out that they were sicked on us by that diseased up scuzzball faggot, Michael Chertoff, who is head of Homeland Security. He was the station agent for the Mossad, the Israeli terrorist organization, prior to getting a federal judgeship in Philadelphia. And now Bush has made him head of Homeland Security. Anyway, the prominent lawyer for the so-called damned, Edgar Steele of Sagal, Idaho, through his contacts in the Justice Department, found out that it was Chertoff that sicked him on us. Incidentally, folks, Chertoff in Russian means devil. Yes, devil. Actually, chert means devil in Russian.
Good. This all leads up to something you have put together, Art.
Well, what did it lead?
Someone sent me a book or folder you put together. When I got it, I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I had to determine whether you were absolutely out of your head or telling the truth. So I called you. And you started to give me some information. I then went to friends of mine and I gave them and showed them the book and I got the same reaction. You are saying that our government, in a nice way, cannot be trusted.
Well, not our government, Mr. Maffei. What I was saying is that traitors inside the United States government planned and orchestrated the World Trade Center massacre. By the same token, the average person that I come in contact with here in Baltimore, Maryland, or anywhere else in the United States is a blithering idiot. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. The name of my book here is The World Trade Center Massacre as Seen Through the Eye of a Tool and Die Maker. Now, what you folks saw on television does not look the same to me as it did to you, because, first of all, you've been dumbed down by the public school system, and your brains have been damaged by the television set, which is controlled by an enemy alien nation that lives among us. Most people believe they're Jews, but they're not actually Jews at all. They're Frankist Zionists, Shabbatians, and members of the Don May sect. Now, if those words seem strange to your ears or foreign, they were just as strange to me a year ago, because I really knew nothing about the Zionists evolving from the Frankists evolving from the Shabbatians, and the Don May sect being an offshoot of the Shabbatian cult. It might interest you people to know that this traitor Paul Wolfowitz, who claims to be a Jew, is really a Frankist. Yes, and his Muslim girlfriend is actually a member of the Don May sect. But that's kind of getting off our subject here. Let's get back to 9-1-1. As you may or may not know, ladies and gentlemen, we Wheelers don't have a television set in our house. We haven't had a television set for probably 20 years. We realized that there were socially destructive themes layered into the scripts of the shows, movies, plays, and sitcoms that we saw. Structurally layered themes that were carefully planned by media types in Hollywood and other places, and university professors, designed not only to dumb down the American public, but to facilitate the race mixing of America and thus lower the quality of the people. Anyone knows, even going past Roman times, that any time a society has been mongrelized, it ceases to exist. It goes the way of the dodo bird, either by internal collapse or a fitter people who are watching them from the outside, who may not be as culturally advanced as this mongrelized race, but they are shrewd, practical men who deal with the world from a standpoint of practicality and good sense, such as the Mongol horsemen. You know, the Chinese had been soft. They'd lived in a state of affluence for 2,500 years, and they built this great wall around their nation, not to keep so-called barbarians out, but actually to keep Chinamen in so they could control their own people. Well, one day they looked out over the Great Wall, and Genghis Khan and the Mongol horsemen were there, and the emperor cringingly invited them in, and they sacked all of China. Then they headed west. The only thing that turned them around, of course, was the Mamluks of Egypt. Yes, boys who had been captured on the steppes of Russia, sold into slavery, and because of their high intelligence, they trained them as civil servants and put them in charge of the Egyptian government. Yes, folks, they turned the Mongol hordes around. They sent them back to China. And the Chinese stopped into Baghdad, you know, which we're right now in a little tiff with. Well, they're interesting fellows. The first thing they did was take the Sultan of Baghdad. They sewed him up in a leather bag, and they rode their horses back and forth across him until he was kind of a reddish-brown ooze, consisting of meat and bone splinters. Then they poured him into a big urn in the city square, and they made the Baghdad citizens drink him up. That was just for starters, folks. Well, the Iraqi people have had trouble with the Mongol hordes, and so have the Mamluks in Egypt. And I'll let you guess what will happen to the United States soldiers that have encountered the, shall we say, patriotic and courageous Iraqi people. Well, folks, I think Mr. Maffei might want to inject a question or two, so we'll give him the floor.
In your book, you are saying that our government was precipitated 9/11.
That is correct, Mr. Maffei, and let me expound on that a little bit. Since we do not have a television here in the Wheeler home, it was probably 6 months before I happened to see the Fox number 2 video, which is on your book and your CD, which comes with the book. We were sitting in the lunchroom at Owens, Illinois, there where I was employed, my buddy and I, who is a mechanic. He's also my shooting buddy. And they happened to show on the television set there the so-called number 175 plane fly completely through the number 2 World Trade Center tower building. And it came out the other side with no damage done to it whatsoever. And it just hung there in the building, sweated fire, and then it was consumed by the fireball. Now, every person in the world who had a television has seen that particular piece of video footage several times. That was the first time I'd seen it. As a matter of fact, that was shown the very night of 911 by all the major media. And I turned to my friend, Mr. Hughes, and I said, "Steve, what was that?" And he said, "Why, Artie, that was the second plane that flew through the World Trade Center tower and killed all those people and knocked the building down." Well, I looked at him and I said, "Steve, are you out of your mind? You're a grown man over 50 years old. I want you to tell me how an aluminum and fiberglass passenger airliner whose entire nose is a polymer layup all the way back to behind where the pilots sit can traverse the entire length of a modern sturdily constructed office building and come out the other side with no damage done to it. Didn't you notice that the plane, so-called, had no windows, and the nose of the so-called plane was a perfect hemisphere, like a 500-gallon yard butane gas tank that us poor whites used to heat our homes with when we quit using wood, coal, and kerosene?" "Yes." Well, Steve said, "You know, Artie, you're right. An airplane can't fly through a building and suffer no damage. That's impossible. Why, an airplane can blow out a tire at 180 miles an hour coming in for a landing, and it tears all to pieces. There's a monstrous fire. Everyone on it is killed, and there's wreckage for hundreds of yards. It doesn't have to hit anything." I said, "You know, you're right, Steve. And this plane, they claim, was going 450 miles an hour plus. Now, I think that bears some, shall we say, investigation." Well, we went on back to work, and I subsequently started the investigation of 911 on my own, which has accumulated in this somewhat massive tome that we've given copies of it away. I've given 100 copies of the book to these traitorous dogs that they call United States Senators. Yes, even the funny boys and girls that are in the U.S. Senate, such as Barney Frank of Massachusetts. He's even got one of the books. What do you think of that? I don't know if you folks can see it or not, but I have the smoke signatures encircled in red of the Tomahawk cruise missiles that came out of the fireball there. You know, Daddy Bush never thought that any of those Tomahawk cruise missiles would miss the building. He certainly didn't think that the news media in their feeding frenzy would be crazy enough to put this up on the, shall we say, public airwaves where the people could see it. But you might want to take a look at my shirt here. I don't know if Mr. Maffei wants a little closer view of it, but you can see this picture that every one of you in the world with a television set saw. This is two of the Tomahawk cruise missiles coming out of the fireball on the number 2 World Trade Center building. One of the Tomahawk cruise missiles is under the full power of its fan jet engine. The other Tomahawk has just dropped its booster. Yes, folks, and this picture is heavily edited. I have one in your book here called number 3K, I believe, a still shot made on high-resolution film, which shows 7 Tomahawk signatures coming out of the number 2 World Trade Center building fireball. That was made, I believe, off a film called the Evan Fairbanks film. Mr. Fairbanks is a kind of a, shall we say, hippie-looking freelance photographer. Also on your CD that comes with your book, you can play the Evan Fairbanks footage and see 4 Tomahawk missile smoke signatures come out of the fireball. Now, just for your check and edification, I have taken off the Department of Defense, U.S. Navy website, a video here of a launch of 2 Tomahawk cruise missiles by a missile ship. You can compare the smoke signatures of the Navy launch with what you see on your video and in your wonderful book that Libby and I have produced for you folks out there, for our fellow Americans who have been taken in by these hideous traitors and frauds. Let me say at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that about 4 months ago, I solicited the machine shop superintendent of the National Security Agency, Mr. William B. Trogler, to get me the satellite pictures made by the National Security Agency, spy satellites, of the so-called planes crashing into the World Trade Center tower buildings. Hasn't it dawned on you good people out there why we've never been shown that by the media? Why the subject's never even been broached? Why the satellite images taken by the National Security Agency down here at Fort Meade should have been prime TV news that night? You could actually see those two so-called planes fly into the World Trade Center building. I ask you, as your fellow American, what is the reason that we've never been shown this footage? Well, I solicited the films from Mr. Trogler, who, incidentally, I have his phone number written in your wonderful book there, if any of you would like to call Mr. Trogler down here at Ellicott City. You know, when General Electric closed 15 years ago, I was employed as a tool and die maker at the General Electric Company down in Columbia, Maryland, and they had an 1,100-acre spread there. Well, Mr. Trogler was my boss. The spy agency came out there recruiting tool and die makers for their spy shop. You know, they not only maintain the spy satellites worldwide and watch us, but watch Russia and China as well, but they make all the spy equipment for the CIA and the FBI and the BATF. You know, that's those guns that shoot poison. That's those drops that they put in your bathroom slippers that you'll fall over dead a week later or a month later, and the coroner would have to know what he was looking for to even find it. Yeah, they make all that stuff down there. Well, Mr. Trogler said to me over the telephone, "My God, Artie Wheeler, what in the world did you do to get the federal government to come down and destroy your home, to rob, raid, and ransack your home with a multi-judiciary task force made up of Baltimore City pigs, BATF, and FBI pigs?" I said, "Well, Billy, I simply accused the traitors inside the Bush administration of planning and orchestrating the World Trade Center massacre." And they didn't like that, so they sicked that hideous-looking you-know-what shirt off on me, and that culminated in the ransacking of my home, of my arrest, and of me putting in solitary confinement, shall we say, 4 months of hard time with pedophiles. Yeah, they put me down with the pedophiles. Isn't that amazing? And I even started converting the prisoners down there, wising them up. But you didn't have to convert the prisoners very much, or the guards. The guards were well-versed in the New World Order. All the guards at the Baltimore Detention Center suspected the Bushes of doing this from day one, and they told me so. Folks, I was treated very nicely down at the jail. I was treated like a guest. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And
Artie, hold it just a minute, Artie. Why did they incarcerate you?
I was charged, ladies and gentlemen, why did they incarcerate me? With having more than 5 pounds of smokeless powder. Yes, which you can buy at Walmart.
Are you talking about marijuana?
We're not talking about drugs. We're not talking about machine guns.
What kind of powder are we speaking of?
We're talking about commercial canister-grade smokeless powder, which can be bought at Walmart store. You can walk in right there tonight and buy it. You can buy 4 pounds. I found out I had brought my powder with me from the Deep South. I'd had about 150 pounds of powder at one time, and I had about 45 pounds of powder left, which over the 25 years that I'd been here in Baltimore, I'd used all the powder up in loading shells. And here in Maryland, it seems this is an anti-gun state. You have to have a permit if you have more than 5 pounds of smokeless powder on your premises.
Wait, now don't they have reenactments of the Civil War and all that?
Well, they have reenactments of the Civil War, and of course they use black powder, which is a dangerous explosive. It is classified as an explosive by the government, BATF, and it's generally thought of as a low explosive. As a matter of fact, a Baltimore City policeman had about 25 pounds of it and killed himself and blew the back of his row home out here 4 or 5 years ago. And he wasn't supposed to have more than, I think, 1 or 2 pounds of the powder at all on his premises because of the danger of black powder. But this smokeless powder cannot be made to explode. The law in Maryland says if you want to buy a $25 permit per annum, you can have 499 pounds of smokeless powder stored on your premises. If you want to buy a $50 permit per annum, you can store more than that. So obviously the legislature doesn't consider it to be very dangerous. Anyway, the Zionist-controlled media, both the Baltimore Sun, which is a scuzzball newspaper, and the media itself, harped on that for months. They tried to say that I was going to attack a synagogue. Why, I hold no enmity toward honest patriotic Jews. We're talking about true Torah Jews and Orthodox Jews. The ones that I'm the enemy of are not Jews at all. They only pretend to be Jews. As I said, they're called Zionist, Frankist, Shabbatines, and members of the Don May sect, like Paul Wolfowitz's girlfriend over in Palestine. Yeah, I hear he's now head of the World Bank. Boy, they'll really get to, shall we say, put some folks indebted to intra-slavery now, won't they? Yeah, sweet old Wolfowitz. What a SOB, sweet old boy. Well, anyway, folks, needless to say, the Baltimore pigs with the FBI and the BATF stole about $300,000 worth of stuff out of my home. They took my old gun collection of bolt-action military rifles, most of which were made before the First World War. You know, they're manually operated. You have to work the bolt. I had one M1 Garand, which fires 8 shots in mint condition. They stole my Garand rifle, which I paid $1,000 for, and they left and tormented my wife for 6.5 hours. Well, I can only tell you that we've got a score to settle with them, which we will ultimately. Either I'll settle it with the pigs, or somebody like me will, a younger man. I want to call to your attention here what happened to the Zaporizhzhia Cossacks when the Bolsheviks came to power in Russia. Yeah, they executed them in police stations night after night for months. Matter of fact, Lenin said that they had to rev the truck motors of vehicles there up to cover the sounds of the gunshots. And the Zaporizhzhia Cossacks thought they were bad boys, like these Baltimore police did. You think Libby had trouble? Well, they used to catch Jew women back in the 1600s, and they'd sew a house cat up in their belly and flip her out on the ground and watch the cat claw his way out. That's what they did for sport. So you can see why the Jews were anxious to settle accounts with them. Now, that piece of information came from a book called The History of the Jews by Professor Abram Sachar. He was the founder of Brandeis University. Just for the record, they stole the book out of my locker out at Owens, Illinois. I used to read from it occasionally. It's an excellent book. I recommend it for anyone. Matter of fact, a young Jewish boy was given the book as a gift for his bar mitzvah. Yeah, that's why I happened to get the book. I guess he sold it at the used bookstore.
All right. Let me cut it here. Are you intimating, or do you think that Israel pushed the United States into this 9/11 attack to precipitate or get us into the war in Iraq?
What appears to be Israel, in answer to your question, Mr. Maffei, would seem that Israel may have pushed America into the attack, that the Mossad may have had advance notice about it, that the Mossad actually participated in it. Let me interject at this point that on February the 1st, I called the man, they say, who planned and broached the subject of doing 9/11. That was Professor Leon Feurth, F-U-E-R-T-H. What was amazing is Professor Feurth is the visiting Shapiro professor at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs. I have a nice picture of Professor Feurth in my book, if you care to buy the book or obtain the CD from Mr. Maffei. And he said, Professor Feurth, may I help you? I said, Professor Feurth, my name is Artie Wheeler. My wife Libby and I have written the best book in the world on the World Trade Center massacre. He said, how can I help you, Mr. Wheeler? I said, Professor Feurth, would it be possible for you to get me the satellite images of the so-called airplanes crashing into the World Trade Center building on 9/11? The one, you know, that Ariel Sharon has and is bad-mouthing and blackmailing President Bush and Daddy Bush with right now. And he said to me, cool as an ice cube, Mr. Wheeler, why do you say so-called planes? Now, folks, I didn't tell Professor Feareth at this time that I knew he was mega, the number one spy handler for the Mossad in the United States. You know, that's the Israeli terrorist organization that commits murders all over the world and sets people up and puts red herrings across the desk of, shall we say, FBI interpreters, such as Mrs. Sybil Edmonds. Nor did I tell Professor Feareth that I knew that in 1994, that traitorous dog Bill Clinton issued an executive order to the FBI and the CIA to stop looking for Mega. Yeah, folks, I'm the coolest cat that ever come in from the sticks. So I didn't wise the good professor up at that point. Well, I said to Professor Feareth, now, Professor Feareth, you were Al Gore's national security advisor. You're one of the top technocrats in the United States. You know about everything from nanotechnology to genetically engineered bacteriological warfare agents that can destroy a specific race, or they can even wipe out an extended family in that race. They have it fine-tuned that carefully. And he never mentioned the satellite images. He said, why, Mr. Wheeler, they don't tell me anything anymore. I've been out of the loop for nearly 5 years. And I said, Professor Feareth, you and I both know that no planes hit those World Trade Center towers. What we saw was a high-tech light show, a scalar hologram image projected in the sky from a machine set up in Ann Tatlock's office. She is the CEO of Fiduciary Trust. Well, Miss Ann just happened to be away from her office that day, and 86 of her personnel were killed, but she'd given most of the girls and boys the day off, and she was out at Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska, at a charity bazaar for golf, put on by, shall we say, funny boy Warren Buffett, the second richest man in the United States. I wouldn't call him a man, I'd call him something else.
All right, hold, but all right, hold it, hold it. Hold it here. Wait a minute. Let's go back a little bit. You're saying that they were not planes that hit the towers.
That's absolutely correct.
Expand and on that a little bit for me.
I'd be delighted to expand on it. I'm sure that most of the people looking at this tape and listening to old Artie Wheeler pop and chirp here are familiar with the B-1 bomber. You've probably seen it at air shows. You've probably seen it put through its paces. The B-1 bomber is quite an interesting piece of military equipment. It has ceramic tile over the exhaust. That means that no smoke signature or heat signature is left from its powerful jet engines. It has a paint which absorbs radar. Therefore, they can never get an image on it at an enemy radar battalion's, shall we say, radar battery. So that leaves only an optical image they can track. Well, the plane is painted the same color as the weather conditions of the day that it's being flown, and it has a scalar image projector on board the plane, which projects images of the B-1 bomber out to the front and sides as the plane flies over its target. Therefore, all they can do is locate the plane optically, and since the plane itself is painted in camouflage and radar-absorbing paint, all that's left is the scalar image.
Hold it. Let's go back on this again. The B-1 bomber is painted so no one can see it.
That's correct. Only and when the bomb bay doors open right. Can you see the B-1
bomber. So what
bomber.
They have these projections of the plane that look like the plane, but they're not the plane.
That's correct. They're called scalar hologram images, and such a device was set up in Ann Tatlock's office the day of 9-1-1, and as the images swooped into the buildings, pre-planted explosives detonated in the World Trade Center towers and destroyed the scalar imaging machine along with portions of the building. Now, when you saw the so-called 175 plane exit from the building, that was a staged media event that was added on either by the National Security Agency's Photoshop or traitors in the Hollywood media that were in league with the Bush administration. And to show you people that they are traitors, I invite you to obtain a copy of the book and CD. I have 30 video clips on the CD of the so-called planes flying into the buildings. And you'll notice that the media, I won't call them the word that I'd call them, it means prostitutes, they were sure to put their logos and trademarks over critical parts of the videos that showed the Tomahawk cruise missiles flying out of the fireball that missed the number 2 World Trade Center building. If you think that's hogwash, check it out, folks. I'll be happy to send you a book and CD.
We spoke about the B-1 bomber. That the B-1 bomber could hide itself in the sky. There's no way of seeing it's there.
That's correct, sir.
So what they did, they could project its image somewhere else, and people thought it was over there. It really wasn't over there.
Yes, they would shoot at that. The enemy would.
Okay. Now, that same technology you're saying was used to cover the Tomahawk missiles that were hitting the building?
Yes, Mr. Maffei, there's a possibility that the two projected images in the sky were cloaking devices for a close-running, close-flying formation of Tomahawk cruise missiles. Now, the only person that's supposed to have the Tomahawk cruise missile is the U.S. Navy. They are fired from surface ships and submarines. They come in plane or nuclear. They cost $1.1 to $1.3 million apiece. They're notoriously unreliable. One-third of the ones they fired in Afghanistan were duds. They didn't even go off. And some of them went errant and actually landed in foreign countries in damaged equipment and people, which the U.S. government had to pay for during the so-called Afghanistani war. Now, let me say at this point that Nikola Tesla, the great Serb electrical genius, first posited the idea that scalar waves could exist a little bit before 1900. As most of you know, Tesla built Westinghouse with his patents. As a matter of fact, Westinghouse's entire business was virtually built on Nikola Tesla's patents. Most people don't know, for example, that Albert Einstein's wife was a Serb national, and she developed most of his actual theories, but she let him take the credit for it. They are extremely gifted people, and as I say, Einstein's wife was a Serb national. Now, you have been exposed to holograms before, even though you may not be aware of it. I'm sure that most of the people out there listening to old Artie Wheeler have, if you're around a big city, been down at the light show at the 4th of July. After the firework display is over, they put the founding fathers' faces in the clouds, such as Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, or Martin Luther King even occasionally is put up in the clouds by what they call a LASAR hologram projector. Now, this scalar machine is hundreds of times more powerful. You can see the LASAR hologram at night with no trouble, but the scalar machine's projected image can be seen in broad daylight. And as I say, the low mortality rate of the B-1 bomber more than proves the scalar machine's effectiveness, doesn't it, folks? Well, any of you, of course, that have seen the LASAR hologram light show at the 4th of July will have no trouble at all understanding the principles of scalar, except it's much more powerful. It's been said to me that scalar can actually burn a hole through armor plate of considerable thickness. The way it's also used is that they will project images of tanks out on a battlefield with it. They will project images of soldiers going into battle, and the enemy will break and run. They'll be terrified at what they see, and it's nothing more than an image. The traitorous dog William Jefferson Clinton referred to the scalar projector occasionally as ghost gun. Go ahead, Mr. Maffei.
I want to get back to this. You've wowed me so far. What was the reason for the government to do this? If they perpetrated this, what was their reasoning? Why?
Well, you asked the question, Mr. Maffei, what was the reason 9-1-1 was done? You say the government. And I always say it wasn't the government, it was traitors inside the government. let me say at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that there have been many patriotic FBI officers, CIA officers, and in various alphabet soup agencies of the United States government that you haven't even heard of that have tried to come forward and talk about what they know. They were threatened. Some of them were killed. Some of you people may have remembered the two Russian airliners that crashed on takeoff at Moscow Airport back in August of last year. Those two airliners had teams of assassins that Daddy Bush had hired to come over here and silence people who they thought were about to spill the beans on 911. You see what happened when the long arm of the Russian state security apparatus saw to it that those two planes were crashed, killing all persons on board. Anyway, this is what you're dealing with, folks. Now, I should go back here at this point and tell you a few minutes ago I started talking to you about Mr. Billy Trogler of the National Security Agency. Billy asked me on the phone when I talked to him and called him that day about 5 months ago. He said, "Artie, I'm afraid to even ask why you call my house. And after 15 years, I haven't talked to you." And I said, "Well, Billy, nobody ever calls you unless they want something. I want you to get me the satellite images made by the National Security Agency of those two so-called planes crashing into the World Trade Center towers." And Billy said to me, "Artie, just what do you think you would see if you had those scalar images that you say exist that you haven't seen on the local news already?" And I said, "Well, Billy, as you know, I don't have a television set. I think we would see those two so-called planes that arrived at Logan Airport, which were real planes at that time. And incidentally, my sources inside the FAA tell me that 175 and number 11 did not fly that day. That those two planes that came and picked up the ill-fated passengers at Boston's Logan Airport came from somewhere else, possibly a U.S. military base. The passengers were on, loaded to those planes. The planes took to the air. Now, whether those planes were taken over by the Global Hawk anti-hijacking system and flown into the Atlantic Ocean and ditched with all passengers on board, or they were flown to a military airbase and they were offloaded onto plane number 93, which was subsequently shot down over Pennsylvania by Commander Rick Gibney, who was a member of the North Dakota Air National Guard, acting on orders of his Adjutant General. If you take a rule, which I told Billy, and lay it out, that plane was supposed to go to California, number 93, but it made a beeline for the U.S. Capitol building. There is no question in my mind whatsoever, ladies and gentlemen, that that 93 plane was intended to fly into the U.S. Capitol building and kill as many senators and congressmen as possible, plus all on board the plane. Now, if we had the satellite images made by the National Security Agency of the so-called planes, we could not only see where they appeared in thin air and flew into the World Trade Center towers, we could see what happened to the planes that were supposed to be number 11 and number 175. We could see if they were flown into the ocean and ditched. We could see if they were flown to a military airbase and offloaded onto 93, subsequently to be flown by remote control and crashed into the Congress.
Let me interject here now. Why would you surmise that they would have images of that from the satellites?
I've surmised that because I'm a tool and die maker, and I've built the Tomahawk cruise missile and the Boeing 767-222 passenger airliners. And if you folks ever looked at an airliner or a military airplane, it's nothing but a thin shell. And as I said, the nose of the Boeing 767 is a layup from the tip of the nose all the way back behind where the passengers
let's calm down a minute. What you're saying here is that you're asking them to show you what pictures they have from the satellite. Am I
That's correct? Right. That's all I ask.
Calm down now. All right, now, why would they have pictures of that?
because the spy satellites keep America under surveillance 24 hours a day. You folks saw the tsunami. You remember that recently happened? You saw pictures of people cleaning the driftwood taken from hundreds of miles away in space by spy satellite cameras. Surely they could have taken something the size of an airplane and photographed it, since the Boston-New York corridor, like the Washington, D.C.-Baltimore corridor, and the Los Angeles-San Francisco-Vancouver corridor is under satellite surveillance 24 hours a day. Why, even Vladimir Putin has the pictures of those two so-called planes flying into the World Trade Center. You know, he might just turn those over to us if you talk to Mr. Putin real sweet. And I know the Israeli Mossad has had tentacles inside the big Cray computers down at the National Security Agency. They have the pictures of the so-called planes crashing into the World Trade Center towers. They also have the pictures of them flying into the ocean, if that's where the so-called passenger planes went. They have the pictures of them being offloaded onto 93. They have the pictures of what really hit the Pentagon. We could see all that if we simply had these satellite spy pictures made by the National Security Agency down here at Fort Meade.
All right. Building number 7.
Well, now, Mr. Maffei, you ask about building number 7. Let's talk about building number 7 a little bit here. The man who supposedly obtained the lease for the World Trade Center complex from the New York, New Jersey Port Authority was a gentleman named Larry Silverstein, who incidentally owns Runway 69, the dance club out on Queens there. And we won't talk about that right now. But they said that the number 7 World Trade Center building caught fire from the collision of the so-called planes with the number 1 and number 2 buildings. And it burned to the ground in less than 8 hours. The New York City Fire Department said it burned to the ground into a pile of rubble of its own volition, and so did FEMA. Incidentally, FEMA had their people in place Monday night. Well, 911 took place on Tuesday, about 9 o'clock, I guess. So, did FEMA know that this was going to happen? I'd have to think that they did. Yeah, they had a man named Kennedy, and he talked with a Massachusetts twang, he said. He told Dan Rather, "Well, we had our people in place Monday night." Yeah, he had that Massachusetts twang. You know, it's very apparent to me, being an old farm boy from the South, that was a Yankee that was doing the talking there to Dan Rather. Anyway, he admitted that they were in place at Monday night. So FEMA had to know that it was coming. Well, let's get back to number 7. This subject is so embroiled that you tend to get off your main course of thought here. But it's all interconnected, and everyone needs to realize that when a person is just talking here with no notes ad lib like I am. Well, someone overheard Mr. Silverstein and recorded him saying that he had the number 7 building pulled. If you're not familiar with the term pulled, that's demolition shop talk. Demolition companies refer to blowing a building to the ground as having it pulled. He said he had it pulled by controlled demolitions down here at Phoenix, Maryland. Well, then he publicly admits that he had the building pulled by controlled demolitions down here at Phoenix, Maryland. Incidentally, folks, there's a nice read on Mark Lazo, the owner of controlled demolitions, on the CD that you might be interested in reading. And I call Mrs. Lozu. She is the wife of one of the Lozu brothers that owns Control Demolitions at Phoenix, Maryland. They are a worldwide blasting company. They do Hollywood stunts. They do everything. And prior to calling Mrs. Lozu, I called 4 different blasting companies around the United States. I told the blasting company engineers, I said, "My name is Artie Wheeler. My wife Libby and I are making the best book in the world on 911. I need some information." And they said, "How can you help? How can we help you, Mr. Wheeler?" I said, "How long would it take y'all to pull an office building to blow it to the ground?" And they said to me, "What size office building are you talking about, Mr. Wheeler?" And I said, "Let's try the number 7 World Trade Center building." They said, "Oh, a building that size would take 4 to 6 weeks, possibly 8 weeks, to go out there after we got the call, survey the building, take the information back to our shop foreman and engineer, plan, prep, and by prep we mean we'd hire an outside contractor to go in and drill the shot holes for the explosive charges, and we would pre-weaken certain stressed members of the building with acetylene cutting torches so it didn't take near the amount of explosive to blow down the building. We would also wrap strategic areas of the building with Gore-Tex cloth to entrap any flying debris from the explosive charges, because the explosive travels at 17,000 feet per second, much higher than a rifle bullet. And you folks might be interested in knowing that some of the debris from the World Trade Center number 1 and 2 towers went as far as the roadway of the Brooklyn Bridge and went as far as the Battery section of New York, which is a little over a mile in opposite directions. Yeah, that she slung some debris, believe it or not. And anyway, I said 4 to 6 weeks. Well, I told Mrs. Lozu that, and I said, Mrs. Lozu, I want you to tell me how your company was able to get the call to blow down the building after it had burned for 4 or 5, possibly more hours. You loaded your trucks in Phoenix, Maryland, which is 250 miles from New York City. You drove to Manhattan. You got your employees to go inside the building with a raging fire going on. They planted the explosive charges. And if anyone cares to look at my video, you can see it was a perfect controlled demolition of number 7 building. It fell flat as a pool table all the way to the ground. She didn't say anything. And I said, Mrs. Lozu, those buildings, all the buildings were mined months ahead of time with explosives. I know that the elevators were out of service on the number 1 and number 2 buildings while your company was placing the explosive charges in there to blow those buildings down. Mrs. Lozu, I'm going to send you, your husband, your brother-in-law, Baby Bush, Daddy Bush, Dick Cheney, Al Gore, and Bill Clinton, and anybody else I can find that was associated with this massacre, to the gallows. Mrs. Lozu, you are going to be put on the gurney cot and the lethal injection put in your arm. And Mrs. Lozu said, oh, and hung up the phone, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think of that? Go ahead, Mr. Maffei.
So, Artie, here we go with explosives being put in these buildings beforehand.
That's correct.
Now, was it because of money they were going to use insurance by blowing these buildings apart, or was it to get us into a war?
Well, that's good that you brought that subject up, Mr. Maffei. Actually, Lenny Bloom of the Cloak and Dagger Crime Show in Toronto, Canada, had a similar talk the other day. He asked me why I thought they did 911. Well, as I say, the man they say broached the subject of doing it was Professor Leon Furth, the professor down at Washington University. And there were several reasons that 911 was done. They started planning this over 10 years ago in the Clinton administration. And one of the reasons it was done, of course, was to make Americans hate Muslims. You have to know a little bit about the Bushes to know who they are and what they've been involved in the past. George Bush's ancestor on both sides of his family was Godfrey de Bouillon. Yes, none other than Godfrey de Bouillon himself. He started the First Crusade. He got a bunch of low-life scum from Belgium, Flems and Walloons both. They went to the so-called Holy Land. There are scholars that even say he recovered the treasure of King Solomon by digging under the stables there of King Solomon's temple. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. This Godfrey de Bouillon was a Merovingian. He also founded the Prayer de Sion inside the, I guess you'd say, Masonic Order. He also founded the Knights Templars of the Masonic Order. They were the people who developed fractional reserve banking to a high level, even though some primitive form of it had been used 5,000 years ago in Babylon. And anyway, the Templars, of course, wound up getting wrecked, and of course, they got their revenge with the French Revolution, which you're never taught in school, but that's what actually happened. Now, first of all, they wanted to make Americans hate Muslims So they started this bogus story about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction. When Mr. Ritter, the weapons inspector, found out that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that it was all a conjured up farce, they planted charges of child pornography against him because he wouldn't play ball with them. And the second reason, of course, was that there was massive putt options taken out in the three or four working days before 9-1-1 took place, both on the airlines and the insurance carriers. And even Elliot Spitzer, the Attorney General of the state of New York, who incidentally is a Khazar, he's Jewish, he's been dragging his feet on this thing, indicting Hank Greenberg, and what's the other one's name, Morgenthau? Is he the same one that his ancestor persecuted the people dealing with the Scottsboro boys back in the 1930s? Well, anyway, both of those fellows are Khazar Jews, and they've been dragging their feet on the 9-1-1 investigation. I sent Mr. Spitzer a copy of Libby and Mai's wonderful book, and I also addressed it to the office girls and boys there in the New York Attorney General's office. We'll see if that builds a fire under Mr. Spitzer.
Artie, it seems to me that that Israel had to get someone to go into Iraq because Iraq was going to start to go against Israel. Israel is trying to clear out the Middle East so they have all the land there. Would that be a reason for it?
That is absolutely correct. The people that are in control of Israel, and as I've said before, honest, patriotic, true Torah Jews and Orthodox Jews want nothing to do with this. It's these crazy, lunatic Zionists that are involved in this thing, and the Mossad, which is actually a criminal enterprise in itself. They are big drug dealers, incidentally. As a matter of fact, a top Mossad agent was the advisor of Manuel Noriega in Panama before Bush attacked their country, that's Daddy Bush, and killed 10,000 Panamanians. The Mossad agent, of course, managed to escape like they always do because they have a large group of Sayans, if you're not familiar with that term, that is a standard Jew that does work for the Mossad. That's why the Mossad has a relatively small number of Katzas, which is what they call their agents. They work through the Sayans. Monica Lewinsky's father was one, and so was Chandra Levy's father. Both of them were oncologists, cancer doctors, and they were Mossad Sayans, as well as being in the doctor business. I suspect that Chandra and Monica both were Sayans as well, and Chandra got her just due. Maybe Monica will soon, who knows? Anyway, the putt options that were taken out on the insurance carriers and the airplanes were enormous. One such man was no other than Mayo Shattuck III. He had a $10 million a year job at Deutsche Alex Brown Bank in New York. The New York Times even referred to this, and suddenly the article just died. You never heard about it. Anyway, Mayo Shattuck quit that $10 million a year job. He then went to some bogus job at the United Nations. Today, he is head of Constellation Energy, better known as Baltimore Gas and Electric. He advised his customers of the bank to take out multi-million dollar putt options prior to 9-1-1. The man who was head of Alex Brown Bank before Mayo Shattuck III was Mr. A. Buzzy Krongard, deputy director of the CIA, who got a promotion the very day of 9-1-1. There is no question in my mind that this scuzzball Zionist Buzzy Krongard actually tipped Mayo Shattuck off that the massacre was going to take place, and they advised their best customers to take out the putt options. The reason we know these putt options were taken out is that the CIA monitors all such stock market activity anywhere in the world by what is commonly called Promise software. Yes, folks, this is a fact. Remember that name, A. Buzzy Krongard, traitor, enemy agent, and Mayo Shattuck III. Right here in Baltimore, Maryland, living high off the hog. There's a nice little read in your book about Mayo Shattuck III. If you're interested, go ahead, Mr. Maffei.
All right, now, in the book, I believe you said that Building 7, Silverstein didn't was not the ultimate owner of it.
It's good that you broached that subject, sir. We found subsequently that the owners of the lease, which was obtained from the New York, New Jersey Port Authority, was not Larry Silverstein. He was just a front man, even though he's probably a billionaire. The actual owners were Henry Kissinger, Hank Greenberg, who was head of the New York Federal Reserve Bank at one time, and Peter J. Peterson, another, shall we say, one of those special people with an Anglo-Saxon name. Sort of like, I guess, what was his name?
Billy Gray.
Mr. Maxwell, that was killed by the Mossad there off his yacht in the Mediterranean. He was the chief Mossad agent there in Europe. And he was a big publisher. He stole his company's pension funds and tried to shake the Mossad down.
But what happened to him? All right, but didn't you say that one of the people, Kissinger, didn't you also say that Bush's brother was part of that?
Bush's brother, Marvin Bush, was head of security for the World Trade Center complex. I suspect him of being the one that threw down the mint condition passports of Sugami and the other Muslim that was very conveniently found there, 5 blocks from where the plane struck the building, and they were, of course, accused of being the hijackers, along with the other Saudi Arabian national.
Artie, hasn't the FBI at this point said that the pictures they had of the terrorists, the Arabs, they weren't the men at all, because they're still alive?
Well, the Muslims were still alive. At least 7 of them were. 6 of them were living in Saudi Arabia that had had their ID stolen, and 1 was living in Florida. You know, when it first happened, they said that they found a Koran in a strip joint bar. Now, you know, Muslims don't drink, and what is amazing, if you look at your video here that comes with your nice book, you see the number 175 so-called plane fly through the building upside down. Yes, its tail is upside down, and it emerges with no windows. That's a pretty good stunt for a pilot that can't even learn to fly a single-engine plane at the flight school down in Florida, isn't it? Yes, sir. That's some real stuntman flying. Why, that'd be hard to duplicate with a Pitt Special or an old, what's the word, Stearman aircraft that's used for stunt flying. No bigger than that World Trade Center is, yet they seem to hit both of them.
Now this comes to my mind. They know now they're going to have to do something to get us into the war, so we can protect Israel. Now that's not good enough for them. They now figure if we're going to do this, we might as well make money when we know the buildings go down, so we'll get the insurance money. Plus, they know that the corporations that they hire to go over there and rebuild Iraq, they're going to make money out also.
That's correct.
So
which they own the corporations. Baby Bush, Daddy Bush, Rumsfeld, all these people are the owners of Carlyle Corporation, for example, which is the 11th largest defense contractor in the United States. They've got their tentacles into everything. And remember this, folks. They've always been able to manipulate the common man into war. All you have to do, like Hermann Göring said at the Nuremberg trials, is simply make the common man believe he's been attacked, he loves to hate, and he's chomping at the bit to go to war. I remember when I was a farm boy down in Arkansas, Vietnam was going on full tilt. I was in my late teens or early 20s, and we had old farm boys that were getting their draft notice, and I told them, I said, "You fools, you're going to go over there and murder children." And they made that war last 16 years. They shot down over 5,000 helicopters, which Lyndon Johnson and Lady Bird happened to own a big interest in Bell Helicopter. They owned a big interest in General Dynamics and Brown and Root Construction Company. And they owned Trans-Texas Airways that ferried the dumb farm boys over to Nam. And when they came back, hippies actually spit on them in the streets. They thought they were heroes, but all they were doing was murdering children. You know, I hate to say it now, but old Jane Fonda, as unpatriotic as she seemed at the time, was absolutely right.
We're starting to run out of little time now. Would you to come to a conclusion now. Why they perpetrated this?
Well, naturally, it was for several reasons, as I said. They wanted to take out put options with their friends, which they took out billions of dollars worth of put options on the airliners and the insurance companies that insured the airlines. And they wanted to go into Afghanistan, which they had planned this for several months ahead of time. And they had to have plenty of cannon fodder ready. So they wanted to make the American people believe they'd been attacked by Muslims. And again, as Goering said, you only need to make people think they've been attacked. Why, our Civil War is a good example here. The Panic of 1859 was caused by the sidewheel steamer, the Central America, foundering off the coast of the Carolinas. And it had a huge gold shipment that had come from the San Francisco Mint. They'd taken it across the Isthmus of Panama by rail, loaded it onto the Central America, and she went down in the storm. Well, that caused the Panic of 1859. By 1860, things were really bad. There was never a people in the world that had any greater opportunity than the American people, immigrants and native-born, in 1860. But you know, they incited them, Lincoln tricked them into firing on Fort Sumter, and it was the bloodiest loss of life that had ever been made in the history of this country. And went on for several years, and of course the liars in the public school tell you that it was over slavery, which it wasn't. And it's very easy to get people chomping at the bit to go to war. What they did in the Philippines around 1900 was horrendous. Winston Churchill, whose mother was an Iroquois Indian, well, her father's name was Jerome, and he had a company taking black folks back to Africa and Haiti. They founded the country of Sierra Leone, and he was given $50 a head, and President Lincoln was a member of this organization. It might interest you to know that Winston Churchill plotted with the 12 or 13 families that have ruled Japan since feudal times, and they provoked the Japanese into attacking by cutting off their scrap metal and petroleum, and which is an act of war. And this traitorous dog Churchill, who should have actually been at Nuremberg rather than the Germans, actually caused this thing. And he, as I say, his mother was an Indian just like me, only she was an Iroquois. Our U.S. Constitution here was based on the Iroquois Confederation, and it was brought into existence to try and stop the bloodshed among the Indian tribes. This is who you're dealing with, folks. And these people, whose names you're familiar with in Japan today, made enormous sums of money out of the Japanese participation in the war. And then, as soon as the war was over, they started rebuilding Japan, major capitalists here in the United States. Most people don't know, for example, that the Bolshevik Revolution was funded by Wall Street bankers. Paul Warburg, Felix Warburg, Jacob Schiff, Otto Kahn, and even Mandel House from Texas, whose family was blockade runners during the Civil War. He had a hand in bringing the Bolsheviks to power. And when they started to falter in the 1920s and 30s, U.S. tax money was used to prop up the Soviet regime. And the bankers were paid handsomely for the loans that they made to the communists. Yes, it was all engineered, folks, and the average American knows nothing about any of this because these same people control the schools. The millionaires and billionaires of Wall Street endow the colleges and universities, so they teach what they're told to teach.
All right, let's stop here a minute. We don't have much time. I want to get to a blockbuster now.
Okay.
When I watched your CD, and I watched Kennedy in his van being shot in the face by a guy in the car. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'll tell you a little story here. A little over a week ago, the Secret Service, bestowed their presence on the Wheeler residence here. It was Mr. Seeger was the top dog, and there was a lady about 30, knockout looking gal with them, and a man about 40 years old. They came up to my door, woke me out of a sound sleep, flashing their tins. You know, the police departments like to flash their tin. I guess it's impressive. They do it, each one in a certain way. Well, they wanted to know. It seems that I had asked the aid of the federal judge that threw Sybil Edmonds' case out of court down in D.C. I said, why did you throw that knockout-looking Khazar Jew out of court? With her lawyers, you wouldn't even allow her to present her evidence. She tried to connect the Bush administration with 911 based on a translated message that came across her desk. I sent Mrs. Edmonds a copy of my book here, and I told her that what she saw was a red herring. It was put on her desk by the CIA to get her to popping and chirping, because she is a beautiful woman. She's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. Matter of fact, a picture of her is in my wonderful book that Libby and I made. And about a half hour later, the U.S. Marshal, Mr. David Ashton, called my house and he said, Mr. Wheeler, how did you get Judge Reggie Walton's phone number? Well, I won't say what I actually said to the U.S. Marshal, but I said, well, it was on the internet, and I was curious to know why he kicked that woman's case out of court. And I offered to give him a book of mine, and this marshal said, I'd like to see one of those books, Mr. Wheeler. I said, I'll give you one. He said, send me one, but don't send one to Judge Reggie Walton. I said, I'll send both you boys a copy of Libby and Mine's wonderful book and a CD, Chitty Chatty, that goes with the wonderful book and the orange label CD. You can print out as many books as you want for the rest of the marshals down there. Well, the Secret Service arrived about 3 days after I sent the book, and I said, I guess Marshal Ashton got his book, didn't he? And they said, he sure did. That's why we're over here. They hum-hawed around, and the old big boss Secret Service agent, Mr. Seeger, said, Mr. Wheeler, what did you mean exactly in your book when you said that you were going to bring Baby Bush to the gallows? Are you making a threat against the President of the United States? I said, no, I don't have to make a threat against him. He's already a diseased-up, AIDS-infected faggot, just like his homosexual lover, Mr. Victor Ashe, the ex-mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee, is, who's now ambassador of Poland. Matter of fact, Victor Ashe made such a spectacle of himself around the White House, wailing and whining and lamenting the fact that he was dying of AIDS, that they made him ambassador to Poland just to get him out of there. Well, they wanted a copy of the book. They said that's what they come for. I sent them down to my computer, and I showed them various pictures out of the book. One of the films I showed them was the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the so-called Zabruder film. And I told a young woman, I said, come over here, doll, where you can get a good look at that film. And, William Greer, the driver of the car, a Secret Service agent, actually turned around with a Colt government model 1911 A1-45 automatic pistol and shot President Kennedy. There was five other shooters that shot at President Kennedy that day. You'll notice, of course, if you look at the film on your CD here, that President Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy were riding much higher in the limo than they normally do. That's because they had made a special compartment for Chi-Chi Rodriguez, better known as Felix Rodriguez, the golfing pro. You all seen him. That does his golf club like this when he makes a birdie. He was Batista's secret police head before the CIA used Castro to run Batista out of Cuba, and the CIA has kept Castro in Cuba for over 30 years in power there. And I was staying at a rooming house in Dallas, Texas in 1981, and there was an elderly man there that was a groundskeeper at Parkview Hospital where President Kennedy's limousine arrived there. He said Secret Service agents were already waiting with buckets of soapy water. They threw the buckets of water on the car and washed his brains and blood down. And Chi-Chi Rodriguez crawled out from under the car and walked off across the lot, covered with blood and soapy water. He had shot President Kennedy up through his lower torso, I found out later on. Johnny Rosilio, Sam Chiancano's man, was the one that blew President Kennedy's brains out. Woody Harrelson, the movie actor's father, also fired on President Kennedy. He's in jail right now for life for murdering federal judge John Wood in El Paso, Texas, that was owned to a gang of drug dealers. He was an honest judge. And, of course, the CIA was bringing the drugs in, and that's why they had Harrelson's father kill Judge John Wood. Anyway, any of you that get the CD, you can see the Zapruder film. You can see the puff of bluish-gray smoke that ensconces President and Mrs. Kennedy's heads. There's four or five frames missing out of the picture, of course. The limo came to a complete stop at one point there on the street. You don't see that. But he was using hardball ammunition, which is loaded with 4.7 grains of Hercules bullseye pistol powder and a 234 grain full metal jacketed bullet. I know this because I used to be the gunsmith at Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and on Sunday I called the shooting matches down there, and they had a hardball match, which nothing but government-issue 45 automatic ammunition was used, and I've seen this classic bluish-gray puff of smoke fired tens of thousands of times, and you can see it blown by President and Mrs. Kennedy after their heads are ensconced.
Artie.
Terrible, folks, terrible.
Artie, there had to be a reason why they wanted to get rid of Kennedy.
Well, President Kennedy was probably as corrupt as any president. His father, Mr. Joe Kennedy, had warned him about the Zionists, that they were dangerous and that you couldn't cross them. President Kennedy would not play ball with them. And President Kennedy said to a graduating class, he said, "There is an organization which intends to enslave the entire world. And before I leave office, I'm going to inform the American people about that organization." Also, 7 days before his murder, he was flying on a plane with Democrat Representative Henry Gonzalez of Texas. And he told Representative Gonzalez, "I'm going to bring the Vietnam War to an end." And needless to say, that was probably the death knell for him. Also, unbeknownst to many people, he started issuing United States Treasury notes with a red seal on them. He issued about $4.5 billion worth of those notes. In other words, he did not let the privately owned central bank, known as the Federal Reserve System, which is actually owned by the House of Rothschild, through factors such as Rockefeller, such as Morgan, such as the Mellons, and even Barbara Bush is one of the owners of the Federal Reserve System. And once he started creating money by the fiat power of the United States Treasury, which is what the Constitution specifically authorizes, the Federal Reserve Act is a totally illegal law that was passed in 1913 with the threat of war coming on America, which they engineered, of course. And people like Congressman Lindbergh tried to stop that piece of idiocy. And, of course, they put out anti-Catholic material against him, and he was never elected again. That's why they murdered his grandchild, was to settle accounts with him. If any of you have ever studied the Babylonian Talmud, Sansino edition, as I and Libby have, you know that the Talmud says, "It pleases Yahweh for a Hebrew to rob a goy. It pleases Yahweh most for a Hebrew to murder a goy. A goy child, 3 years and 1 day old, is suitable for sex, and to do so is no sin for a Hebrew. If the Hebrew feels he has sinned in having sex with the goy child, simply bathe before evening and all vestiges of sin will pass into remission." The Talmud also says, "If a man should raise his hand against a member of the Hebrew race, he is to take vengeance on that man's descendants until the 10th generation." Hence, the Lindbergh baby was ritually murdered by the Zionists, folks. Yes, all his blood was drained off and used in Passover and Purim rites. It might interest you folks to know that little John Benet Ramsey was a victim of Jewish ritual murder, and they paid off the police and her parents to keep mum. Go ahead, Mr. McVeigh.
We're about to sum these things up. Aren't you afraid of what they can do to you if they have knocked off President Kennedy?
Well,
I remember I have a man called Father Charles Coughlin, who in the 1930s told the United States not to get into the war. He told the United States about Israel. And the Vatican, Roosevelt sent word over to the Vatican, then they took him off the air. He was called the radio priest.
Yes, that radio priest was Father Coughlin. He had an extremely large audience all across America. And as you say, the Vatican silenced him because he was telling the truth. And you ask me, am I afraid they're going to whack me? Well, Lenny Bloom told me that the Rothschilds have issued orders for the Bush administration to be dismantled. Dismantled was the word Mr. Bloom added. I might tell you that about 7 weeks ago, I was paid a visit by the Baltimore City Pigs and a member of our esteemed FBI. They came knocking on the door here, woke me up out of a sound sleep, and they flashed their tins. I said to the Baltimore City policeman, I said, "Are you a member of the Baltimore City Pigs?" And he said, "I'm a Baltimore City police officer." And I said, "You scuzzballs probably are the ones that came in here and ransacked and robbed my home wearing the ski mask and tortured my wife, Libby." And they said, "Mr. Wheeler, did you send Judge Lefko in Chicago a CD?" I said, "Sure, I sent that scuzzball federal judge a CD." I said, I told her she had to be the stupidest woman in the world. She tried to be a part of a campaign kicked off against white nationalists. She put a friend of my wife, Reverend Matthew Hale, in prison, supposedly because he wouldn't destroy his Bibles. And that greasy tub of guts, Abe Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League, funded a bogus church in Oregon that started using Reverend Hale's trademark and name and tried to copyright it, which they did, which Reverend Hale had been using the name for many years. How that's possible, I don't know. Anyway, he wouldn't destroy his Bible, so she put him in prison. Then they had a federal informant who they paid $55,000, trump up a charge that he had said he wanted the judge murdered. A nitwit jury made up of Illinois folks sentenced Reverend Hale to 40 years the other day, which further confirmed the fact that, like I've said, the average juror, like the average voter, is a complete babbling idiot, and that certainly proved it. And anyway, I told Judge Lefko, I said, "Don't you know that if the Chicago Pigs had your home under protective surveillance, that it was them that killed your mother and your husband, or they let somebody in the house that did the murder? And since the two were shot in the back of the head with a .22 caliber rimfire pistol, it looked like a classic Mossad hit to me. That was a Manchurian candidate that they arrested up in Wisconsin who allegedly blew his brains out in his van there and had a confessional note that he killed the judge's mother and husband. Very convenient, wasn't it? Yeah, you can bet the CIA killed him right there at the roadblock with the help of the Wisconsin police. Anyway, I told the FBI agent, I said, "You say you have a copy of the book that I sent Judge Lefko? The wonderful book here that you folks can obtain?" He said, "Mr. Wheeler, they sent me the book back from Chicago to Baltimore." And I said, "Well, if you've showed that book to your buddies in the FBI, you're in some danger now. You know the Bushes did 9-1-1. You know that they committed the greatest massacre that's ever been done in the history of the United States of America. And if they knew you had that book and was showing it to people, they'd knock you off." And he said to me, "I can't talk politics, Mr. Wheeler." And I said, "We're not talking politics, boy. We're talking treason and murder against the United States of America." I said, "They started planning this caper in the Clinton administration over 10 years ago. That scuzzball is just as guilty of it as the Bushes are." And I said, "Let me set the record clear. Baby Bush had nothing to do with 9-1-1. He wasn't in on the planning of it because he's an idiot. His brain is into dementia, as anyone can tell that listens to him talk. Yeah, the AIDS has totally destroyed his brain. Yeah, you know that he's got the AIDS." And he said to me, "Well, Mr. Wheeler, you wrote the damn book. Don't you think you're in a certain degree of danger?" And I said, "Hell, boy, I'm an old man. I've had 3 strokes. I might die in the next 5 seconds. There'll be somebody that'll replace me. It's of no consequence whether I die or not. My life's behind me." "Well," I said, "come on over here and sit down at the computer. I'll show you some stuff that's in the book." And they, like the Secret Service, couldn't get out of this house fast enough. Yeah, I don't know what they didn't want to hear, but they come over here for information, and then they said they had to be out checking on more crime. Go ahead, Mr. McFay.
I want to end this with this.
What do you want to tell the American people?
Well, what I would basically tell you, not only the American people, but all the peoples of the world, because I've lived all over the United States and there is no difference in people, they're the same everywhere you go, is quit being sucker bait. Quit letting these fools that control the media or the church incite you against your fellow man. Don't you know that those dumb Arkansas farm boys that murdered children in Vietnam had tractor grease on their belly, and they had tractor grease in their brains, and it affected their thinking? This bunch that's going to Iraq right now and murdering children. Frankly, folks, I hope they don't come back, because they're the lowest social caste in the United States. The military has always been hated by the American people, even since colonial times. There's nothing for them to do. There's no jobs for them. All the jobs have been purposely sent out of the United States. Those dumb farm boys that were clinging to helicopters in Saigon and trying to get out of the country when Vietnam fell to the communists didn't know that the Wall Street capitalists were signing deals for Nike shoes even before they got out of the company. And they intended for the communists to win. They had a slave population in Vietnam now under their communist commissars that would make Nike shoes for $3.50 a pair. And Sally's soccer mom, you know, she's smart and thrifty. She'd go out to the mall and load Joe's six-pack stupid back with more credit card debt, buying her disrespectful kids those Nike shoes and those leather jackets at $140 to $500 a pair or a jacket. Now, the same with these Iraqi nitwits. They come over here, they'll go to work for the police department or the FBI, and we'll have to fight them right here in this country someday. Private citizens will, when they've been incited against the American people. And remember, folks, the Jew always wants a pluralistic, multicultural, multiracial society. And that's because the Jew can easily, through his control of the media, set the various factions of a nation against one another when they are a multicultural, multiracial society. And if they've succeeded in mongrelizing down the basic white stock of that country, then the destruction of that nation at the hands of Israel is assured. And I don't have to tell you that. You can read it in Bibles. You can read it in Korans. You know, Mohammed at first said not to harm the Jews. Then he turned against them. Why is that? Why have they been kicked out of every country in the world for the last 4,000 years? Well, you know the answer to that as well as I. And, folks, I could talk about 9-1-1 for days. Mr. Maffei only has a certain amount of film.
I have one thing I want to interject here. I said something to you. You can cut that off if you can. I said something to you that bothered me. Sean Hannity got his national syndication on the 10th of September. I would like, and here's the problem we have. When I tried to already tell people of some of the information I have, oh, they say can't. Our government wouldn't do that. Listen to Sean Hannity. What a great American, Catholic American, and Limbaugh and Riley. I mean, they would tell us if the government was doing that. They're great Americans.
Well, I'll comment a little bit on that. Sean Hannity, that's pretty boy. You know, he became syndicated, I guess, about a day before 9-1-1. And he's what they call a Shabbos Goy. He's a Judas goat. His job is to sandbag any criticism of the Bush administration. He is a traitorous dog. He may be one of those funny boys with the limp wrist. He sure is pretty, you know. I'd almost want to kiss Sean. Well, there's Ann Coulter, you know. She's what's called a Shabbos Goy, too. Some of the lies that she puts out defy belief. And, of course, Michael Savage? Why, isn't his name Wiener? What kind of a name is Wiener, folks? Wasn't he a filthy Zionist Jew, Berkeley Marxist College professor for 30 years? Isn't he promoting his books? Hasn't he got a big loud mouth? Isn't he a windbag? Yeah, what that Jew needs, of course, is the gas. I mean, for real this time. He needs the good old Zycon B. You know, it won't be a fake Holocaust this time, ladies and gentlemen, if they lose their grip like they tried to say Hitler pulled against them. It'll be the real thing. Why, Libby and I, can smell the corpses cooking right now. As far as that greasy pig, Rush Limbaugh, that slimy tup of hog guts, he's from Cape Girardeau, Missouri. He's a faggot, just like his sister is a dyke. Yeah, you know, they pay him $270 million a year to get up there and mislead that Westchester, New York crowd of those old Shabbos-goy dames that clap on command. Yeah, Limbaugh's so fat and greasy, he can't even go to the bathroom by himself. And this is what you're being proffered, folks. Yeah, there's a lot of them that work for the feds. That old Alex Jones, that's on Genesis Communications Network. I called him a fat, greasy tub of hog guts the other night. And that John Stedmiller that helped send Mark Conkey to prison. You remember Mark from Michigan, don't you, folks? Yeah, he had the militia show on for several years on shortwave. And it was information that Stedmiller gave to the feds and the pigs in Michigan. Mark's in prison today. The federal pigs, BATF, were over at his home harassing his wife and children 3 or 4 months ago. And like I say, Stedmiller's a fed, so is Alex Jones. Anybody that orders a book or a tape from them, they've established a file and put your name in it. They're a funnel for names. We mentioned the National Alliance here, which my wife was a member of. Dr. William Pierce, who was head of it. Kurt Saxon, the survivalist down in Arkansas. Incidentally, his website is on the net. If you want to call him, tell him you know me, Artie Witter. He told me that Dr. William Pierce was in on George Lincoln Rockwell's assassination. He helped to set it up down here in Virginia when they killed Rockwell. Pierce had been working both sides of the street, according to Dr. Saxon, for 30 years. I don't know if that's true or not. Call Kurt Saxon up and have a chitty-chatty with him. Go ahead, Mr. Maffei.
That's it.
That's it.
Marty, we meet again, and I'd like to tell you that the DVD we did with on Bush and 9/11 was well received, and I hear now that we have some more information that we certainly didn't have on the original DVD that we did. So can you tell me what it is that we have that's so important and so new?
Well, Mr. Maffei, the important thing that I found is that there were shown on television videos that actually prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the Israeli Mossad, which incidentally is not Jewish, they are a gang of criminals that were founded in 1947, when the nation of Israel was formed, they actually perpetrated 9/11. Yes, that's correct, folks. Let me explain here a minute how I know this. As some of you know or don't know, maybe, I'm a tool and die designer. I've worked for 30 years on material and fixtures that make the Tomahawk cruise missile and the Boeing 767 jet airliner, what they allege crashed into the World Trade Center tower buildings. Let me say at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that there were no planes that crashed into the World Trade Center towers. Why, even Scuzzball Morris Dees of the Southern Poverty Law Center has a picture on his website of Mr. Maffei and calls me a neo-Nazi, that I have some kind of crack-brained scheme or theory about 9/11. Well, folks, we'll let you see the pictures here, which you've all seen on television numerous times. Most of you didn't really understand what you were looking at, but they will be explained to you very carefully here. The first picture I have, of course, which Mr. Maffei is going to show you on the screen of the computer, which incidentally is on your CD or DVD if you decide you want to have one, is the destruction of the number 2 World Trade Center tower building. You know, those were the two big buildings. This is the south one that was blown down by whatever. People thought it was blown down. There were a few controlled demolitions, mostly to distract the public, I might add. I'm going to show you an example of what I'm talking
about.
On page number 133, you see a sequel picture. It's also on page 134. And the final picture, of course, is on page 135. Let's take a look at the beam disintegrating, which, as I said, you've all seen. Watch it. Watch that beam weighing several hundred tons turn into powder.
All right, now I'm going to go close, Artie, so we can really see it. I'm going in close to it, all right? So let's do it.
It's closer this time.
Where's the powder?
Do it again, turns Artie. To powder, folks, in less than 5 seconds.
Yes, do it again, Artie.
South World Trade Center Tower, probably the strongest office building in the world.
Do it again, Artie, please.